Good morning, members. The Minnesota House of Representatives Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel, excused. Representative Hollins. Representative Hollins. Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Long. Representative Long. Representative Lucero.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Poston. Representative Poston. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Representative Vang.
Here.
Representative Zhang.
Here.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Long, excused. Representative Poston. That concludes roll call with 16 ayes, 2 excused.
Very well. Members, the quorum is present. This hearing is being conducted remotely on an electronic platform pursuant to Minnesota House Rule 10.01. The public can view the House Rule on our House website. You can also go to our committee page on our House website in order to see instructions on how to view this proceeding via streaming video. As well as instructions on how to participate, sign up and participate for public testimony. Excuse me. Members, first order of business is for us to adopt our minutes, and so I'm wondering if Representative Cleavorn would move adoption of the minutes of February 18th.
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes of February 18th be adopted as written.
Very well. Representative Cleavorn moves adoption of the minutes of February 18th. Discussion. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes of February 18th of this committee are hereby adopted. Members, we have 4 bills up today, and so I'm going to hopefully keep us moving. We're going to begin with House File 952, Representative Richardson, Missing and Murdered African-American Women. Representative Richardson, the chair, moves to refer House File 952 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Richardson, your bill is before us. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Would you like me to start with the A2 amendment?
Yes, indeed. Representative Richardson, the chair, will move adoption of the author's amendment, the A2 amendment discussion. And this simply puts the bill in the shape that you wish it to have before us. Is that correct?
Correct. It's purely a technical amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Richardson. Members, all in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and House File 952, as amended, is before us. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. House File 952 would create a task force on missing and murdered African-American women and girls to create a comprehensive picture of the disparities related to violence, homicides, and missing person cases in Minnesota. This task force is patterned after the work of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Task Force, which now has a comprehensive roadmap to reducing and eliminating violence and helping Indigenous women and girls heal from that violence. There are some disturbing statistics regarding racial and ethnic differences and the homicide rates of women. While homicide is one of the leading killers of women from all racial and ethnic backgrounds, Black women face a significantly higher homicide rate than most other racial groups in the United States. A Center for Disease Control study from 2015 found that the overall homicide rate for women to be 2 for every 100,000 women. That rate soared to 4.4 per 100,000 for Black women and 4.3 for Indigenous women. Here in Minnesota, based on a preliminary and unpublished review of Minnesota Certificate of Death data from 2016 to 2019, the average age-adjusted homicide rate for Black and African American women in Minnesota was 2.2 times the rate for all women in Minnesota and 2.7 times the rate for white women in Minnesota. The statistics are also disturbing in missing people cases. An estimated 64,000 to 75,000 Black women and girls are missing in the United States. This includes abductees, those exploited by sex trafficking, and also those classified as runaways. Black women comprise over 40% of domestic sex trafficking. While the disproportionate numbers of missing Black women and girls across the nation is alarming, what is even more alarming is the media coverage and legislation that is lacking when compared with missing white women and girls. A study from 2015 found that although Black children account for approximately 35% of missing children cases, Black children accounted for a shockingly low 7% of the media references. Another study found that white children accounted for 67% of the Associated Press missing children media and 76% of CNN coverage compared with just 17% for Black children in the Associated Press and 13% for CNN. There are complex issues at play that create an environment where Black women and girls are disproportionately impacted. And while our time is short today, we have to consider root causes of historical trauma, systemic racism, sexism, sexual objectification of Black women and girls, and the vulnerabilities that poverty, homelessness, child welfare disparities, domestic violence, sex trafficking, and fear of law enforcement, among other issues. It's clear that more is needed to create public policies to address these disparities, and it's clear that we need a community response. The creation of this task force would be a first step to understanding and framing the issues and the data. It would also offer a long overdue opportunity to create a more strategic and holistic roadmap for prevention and strategies. While there's much more to say on this issue, I know our time is short, and I have a few testifiers to also bring their perspectives today.
Very well. Thank you, Chair Richardson, for your presentation of the bill. I do note four testifiers, and unless you have a preference, I'll just call them forward, Representative Richardson, in the order that I have them here, beginning with Ms. Artika Roller, Executive Director of MnCASA.
Thank you.
Ms. Roller, I'm sorry. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Mariani. My name is Artika Roller, again, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. MnCASA is a statewide coalition representing more than 66 programs across the state of Minnesota that provide sexual violence services. My 20-year career has been devoted to addressing issues of sex trafficking, domestic violence, and sexual assault. During my career, I have had the opportunity to see the best of humanity, and unfortunately, I've had the opportunity to see the worst as well. As the director for several programs here in Minnesota, several times a year, we had program participants or their family members that either had became missing or murdered, or they had family members that also were missing. That's how I met the Clarity family that will testify today. Unfortunately, many other families shared stories of the barriers that they had to face when they were either trying to seek justice or find their family members. A 2019 report by the Congressional Research Service reveals that African Americans overrepresent the number of missing person cases compared to the population as a whole. The FBI estimates that there's 64,000 Black women and girls currently missing. The urgency to understand what's happening to so many of our women and girls is critical to our public safety and community well-being. According to the Violence Policy Center, the average age of Black women or girls that are missing are 5 years younger than the average age of all women victims that are missing or murdered. Here in Minnesota, Violence Free Minnesota reported in their 30-year analysis on intimate partner homicides, nearly 15% of all adult women victims were Black, while the Black population in Minnesota only makes up around 6% of our population. Unfortunately, we don't have more data to significantly address and outline the issues and the needs in Minnesota. Finally, the Institute of Women and Policy Research 2017 reported in their report, the status of Black women in the United States provides some recommendation for reducing violence against Black women and girls. Their safety recommendations include improvement of data collection, increased investment in research and promising practices, and addressing racism, discrimination, and cultural insensitivity among service providers, systems, and law enforcement. I believe that the House File 05952 will align with the recommendations, and MnCASA fully supports the purpose of House File 0952 to create a task force to study the issues and provide a report with recommendations. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Relder, for your testimony. Next, we have Lakeisha Lee and Marquita Clardy. Clarity, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and provide us with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Shali. Thank you very much for having us present today.
And I'm Marquita Clarity. You said the last name right. Thank you.
We just wanted to be able to provide our testimony in regard to my sister's story. In the community we live in, St. Paul, we've grown up here. This is where we know as our home. My sister went missing in 2013, February 11th, 2013, she went missing. And that was the last time we seen her alive. When we reached out to authorities, we reached out right away because my sister was not someone who would go missing and not someone who would not turn up. She was always in contact with us. That did not happen that day. And we contacted authorities. They let us know at that time that because she was 18 years old, that she was probably with her boyfriend or maybe just ran off with friends. That was a difficult moment when we knew and we were adamant that something was wrong. She was not answering her phone. In the world of technology, we were asking friends, we're logging into her accounts, and we could not find any trace of her. This went on for 2 weeks. 2 weeks of not knowing where she is, exactly 10 days of not knowing where she is, not knowing what to do, not knowing what resources to reach out to. At that time, my mom and I put our brains together. We reached out to the car place where my sister just bought a car, and we reached out to them and let them know that my sister was missing. They did contact us immediately when they received a letter in regard to that car. By us working with that car agency, the credit union, and also the police department, we were able to connect with them, and they were able to, unfortunately, find my sister there.
Also, I just want to reiterate the fact that you have to, based on your child and or family member missing, you have to convince the authorities that they're not just gone for the day or gone for the week. We need support systems to help us where to go right away to help find our missing child. Maybe if we found her on that day, she would still be here with us. But it took us, like Lakeisha, my daughter, said, 10 days to locate her after convincing the police that she was missing. Something was not right. We did find her eventually, but she was deceased by then. So I don't know for sure if we had found her that day, maybe we could have still saved her life. But Minnesota in February, it's pretty cold out there. And she stayed in a car for 10 days out in the cold. So I'm just asking for support for our legislature to look at this and try to help other young women in our community so this does not happen again with anyone's child. Thank you.
This task force would do a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. I am so sorry for your loss. I am certain that the entire committee feels the same as well. No one should go through what you went through with your loved one. As a parent myself and a grandparent, I just can't imagine incredible pain. And I pray for healing for both of you and for your family. And I want to express my deep gratitude on behalf of this institution, of your people's body here, for coming forward, for having the courage to share a very painful story in the hopes that we can develop stronger ways to support other families and hopefully be able to prevent tragedies like the one that's been inflicted upon you. God bless and thank you for being with us here today. With that, members, I have, it looks like Sawada Kirkland, is that correct? Yes, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Mariani. Sawada Kirkland, I am the president of the National Black Police Association, Minnesota chapter, as well as the vice chair, a former Ramsey County Sheriff's Office commander as of this week, this Tuesday. 16 years of service in law enforcement. I am speaking to you today on behalf of the women in law enforcement and in my organization surrounding this bill. It is vital and crucial to the awareness of what has been happening in Minnesota with the disproportionate maybe awareness and numbers surrounding missing and murdered and exploited Black women and children. In Minnesota. I am a Black woman myself, raising three Black daughters, and I worry about their safety every day. I am extremely moved by the family's message. And being a law enforcement officer myself, I've had to give that news. I've had to speak to families regarding investigations and just lack of intentionality around missing women, missing Black women. And it's touching and it's moving. And we have to do more surrounding the media attention and not just disguise it as these girls are just running away or they went off to be with their boyfriends or their friends or they wanted to hang out or they had an argument with a family member to then later be found deceased. And it is troubling. And as a law enforcement officer, I know that we can do more. I know that there can be more attention given, to the priority here in Minnesota. This bill would help tremendously. This task force would mean vital information sharing across the board regarding law enforcement and communities and families in order to save more lives. And so I am in support of this bill. I am in support of the task force and just want to represent the voices of the Black police officers in this state and do all we can to help the efforts. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Commander Kirkland, and thank you for affirming the need for vital information and sharing supporting both our families and our law enforcement communities in preventing and intervening an important dynamic that's unfolding here and across our nation. I also want to thank you for your service to my county, Ramsey County, and congratulate you on your next moves. Thank you for serving the people of Minnesota as a peace officer in our state. With that, members, we're going to move to Dr. Peter Hayden.
Chair, I think Dr. Hayden was delayed in a meeting.
Okay, all right, very well. If we can get him in, we will, if he is able to join us. Then there is a public testifier, Ms. Gloria Perez, President and CEO of the Women's Foundation. It's good to have you with us. Ms. Perez, please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Madiani and members of the committee. My name is Gloria Perez, and I am the chair, the president and CEO of the Women's Foundation of Minnesota. For 38 years, the Women's Foundation has conducted the state's leading research on the well-being of women and girls. It has made community grants across the state of Minnesota and advanced policy to create a state where women, girls, and families thrive. As Minnesotans, we take great pride in our state. We are often ranked number one or number two in terms of quality of life, educational attainment, and workforce participation. However, this success rate is not true for all Minnesotans. In fact, Minnesota is second worst in the nation for racial disparities. These racial disparities combined with gender disparities are distinctly violent for African-American women in our state. That is why this bill to create a task force to investigate the causes of violence against African-American women and girls and to identify recommendations for solutions is critical. Since 2010, the Women's Foundation has led the Minnesota Girls Are Not For Sale, a campaign to galvanize resources to end the sex trafficking of Minnesota girls and boys through grant making, research, public education, and convenings of Minnesotans across the state. One piece of research we conducted was mapping the market for sex with trafficked minor girls in Minneapolis, a first of its kind approach to understand how the overall market for juvenile sex trafficking manifests within communities. We focused on Minneapolis, understanding that our findings would have implications for other cities and regions. And here is what we found. Sex trafficked victims tend to be young girls of color from communities characterized by poverty, the majority being African-American girls. Why, you may ask? Simply put, we found vulnerability to trafficking is directly linked with economics. According to a recent NAACP report, the typical Black family in the Twin Cities earned about $39,000 in 2017, lower than the median income for African-Americans nationally. This earning is less than half as much as the typical white family income of about $82,000. Additionally, in Minnesota, a quarter of Black households live in poverty, five times the poverty rate for white households. And among children under the age of 18, the child poverty rate is 8.5 times higher for Black children. And all of this before the COVID pandemic even happened, which we know has only widened these disparities. Poverty makes African-American women and girls more vulnerable to violence. They are targeted if they are living in poverty, unable to meet basic needs, experiencing mental health issues, using drugs or alcohol, and more. A more recent report, our 2020 Status of Women and Girls Research conducted with the University of Minnesota, revealed that we could fill Target Field almost 18 times with the number of Minnesota women who have experienced rape, physical violence, or stalking. We can fill Target Fields 18 times. Just think about that for a moment. African-American women make up a disproportionate percentage of this staggering number. Not only do African-American women experience gender-based violence, they also lose their lives because of it, with Black transgender women experiencing the highest form of fatal violence of all transgender people. Whether it is through intimate partner violence or state section violence, Black women are targeted and murdered distinctly. For example, nationally, nearly 250 Black women have been killed by police since 2015. You see, we need to give this issue time, attention, and resources so that we can properly understand this complex, multi-issue problem and create effective solutions. In conclusion, our state's prosperity is interwoven with the safety and well-being of African-American women. While Black women continue to lead in Minnesota and the nation by innovating, organizing, and caretaking for their families and communities at large, they are still left behind. We are inspired by our Native brothers and sisters in seeing that it is possible to recognize the distinct acts of violence that communities face and do something about it. As the Women's Foundation of Minnesota, we urge you to pass the Missing and Murdered African American Women's Task Force so we can find solutions for a safer Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Perez. And I haven't had a chance to speak to you face to face, but a belated congratulations on your assignment, your new post there, your new duties as president and CEO of the Women's Foundation. Looking forward to continuing working with you.
Likewise.
Members, so that's what I have for testifiers, Chair Richardson. I'll open this up for a conversation, discussion, and then we'll move to a vote. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers for your powerful words. I really appreciate it. I've had a chance to exchange a couple of messages with Ms. Clardy, and I'm really grateful to Representative Richardson for this. And I guess I just want to highlight something for committee members that I was thinking, but I heard the powerful story about Brittany's death. I feel like, for some of my colleagues, the phrase Black Lives Matter may be something that that some folks have a negative reaction to or feel like it somehow is devaluing other lives. And just as I was listening to that story, I just was thinking, I just hope that we can really center in this conversation now and the rest of our hearing today and in all the work that we're doing, that there are so many ways that our society does not value the lives of our Black and brown members in our society. And that's what this bill is about. We really need to, I just hope if you had, to any of my colleagues or any members of the public watching this, if you had an emotional reaction to what you were hearing, if you're thinking about this, that we can really internalize and can say proudly and without reservation that Black Lives Matter. And that phrase is really important. And I can say as somebody who has handled sex trafficking cases as a prosecutor, and I know we'll be talking about this later in the hearing, the many ways in which I've been involved in this work, hearing from survivors of what they've seen, and survivors of sex trafficking, white survivors who've talked about their sisters experiencing this, who are Black or brown, and just the horrific treatment that they've received from the people around them. We can see this happening right in this work. And so I just really, I just hope that we can recognize that our society is not valuing people equally. It's critical that we do that. And we can at least, as a very basic point, say that it's time that we not be losing members of our society in this way this is aimed at. So thank you so much, Representative Richardson, and everybody else who's testified. And let's really all keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative and Chair Pinto. Powerful affirmation for our need to indeed have our laws demonstrate how Black lives do matter. Clearly, the testimony here paints a painful, true, disparate story of behavior that does not value the lives of Black women here and across the nation. Representative Cleavorn, then followed by Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm very sorry that Dr. Hayden is not here today, and I am not speaking for Dr. Hayden. But what I would like to say is that his daughter went to school with my children, his daughter Taylor. She was beautiful, she was bright, she was funny, she was everything a parent would want for their child. And through no fault of her own, she was murdered in a crossfire incident. We have written, we have called, we have tried everything to get her murder investigated, and nothing has happened. And as since I know her family, I felt it important to speak up and to say it impacts the family, it impacts the entire community. It is a tremendous loss for all of us. And I would encourage us to take this legislation forward, to move it into law, and to do what is right for every family, and to alleviate the pain. It doesn't change maybe the outcome, but to alleviate the pain for our families and to give dignity to the victims and to those who are missing, it's just the right thing to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. Thank you for lifting up the reality of the Hayden family and the need for us to both bless them, but also to act. And act in the spirit of dignity and dignifying their experience and of all our families as well. Representative O'Neill, followed by Representative Huat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Richardson, for bringing this bill forward. Just as I and my side of the aisle were incredibly supportive of now Senator Kunish, her bill that came forward about missing and murdered Indigenous women, we are equally supportive. No mother should have to go through what this family did. I have lost a child myself, and excuse me, I'm a little bit emotional because it's incredibly painful to lose a child regardless of how you lose them, but your story is incredibly painful. And we just want to acknowledge that and offer the support of this side of the aisle because children are precious. Children are so precious. No one should go missing and not be looked for. I also have a brother who disappeared, and we don't know to this day where he is or what's happened to him. So, you know, this happens to people, men, women, children, boys, girls. It happens. I myself have African-American and Black members of my family, and I say that differently because my nephew is Trinidadian, and he has two beautiful children with my niece, and another nephew has married an African-American woman from Minneapolis, and they have three beautiful children, and their oldest was named after my daughter that died. These are precious, precious children. I can't imagine losing a child the way that this family did. It's wrong on every level. And I will offer my support again to uncover the root causes of this and try to bring justice for those that have lost loved ones. And I'm particularly interested to hear the bills that come, as you can imagine, as they are getting to some of the root causes, which is the sex trafficking and all of that. And so I just wanted to offer that support, and just for time expediency, Mr. Chair, I'm speaking on behalf of my side of the aisle. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Thank you for the reminder of our need to get to root causes and also of the constant reminder ourselves of creating laws with humanity at the center of it. Thank you. Representative Huat, and then Representative Lucero, then we'll move to about members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And real quick, Representative Richardson, again, great work. This is really a great bill, and I'm glad to be a co-sponsor on this bill. One thing I'd like you to consider, though, as you made your task force up on the bill, I was reading through it, and this is an oversight that many of these groups have when they're doing this. Some of the first caregivers that many missing people have are emergency medical service workers and ERs. And at least I was wondering if you possibly consider adding, even as an ad hoc when needed, some of these groups that that maybe can help with the process and going through the consideration of what this may look at like down the line. Representative Richardson, is that a possibility?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Yeah, I think the goal is to really get as comprehensive of a picture as we can in terms of thinking about all the related intersections across the community. And I know with the previous process, there were a number of like key informant interviews and different stakeholders sort of brought in through processes to really make sure that we're getting a fuller picture. And so I think that's the goal. So thank you for raising that issue, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Lucero, then we'll move to vote members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to reiterate what my colleagues have said in regards to our broken hearts, our prayers with the mothers, the fathers, the family members of anybody who has had the unfortunate tragedy of having this loss as a member of their family. Nobody should have to go through this, regardless of their race, their background. All lives are indeed precious. All lives matter. All lives, all of us are created in the image of God, and we definitely want to value and bring an end to this, these tragic stories that we continue to hear. I take issue with some of the comments of the members, not the testifiers, but the members on this call, when they say things about institutional racism or that as somebody with Hispanic myself, we have, you know, our entire family is black and brown. I categorically reject the notion that has been stated here that our lives don't matter. Brown lives matter. Black lives matter. And any notion that society or any other group doesn't value us equally as the rest of society is something that is categorically false, and I reject. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. A much deeper conversation on this issue is obviously needed, but I do think that the spirit of today's conversation is to be able to focus specifically on Black women in the state of Minnesota. And there's all sorts of both personal anecdotal sharing as well as objective data, not enough data, unfortunately, that tells us that it's important to be able to focus that way and to do so working out of a value system that lifts up the inherent dignity of Black women in our society. Representative Richardson, Chair Richardson, I'll give you the last 2 seconds, and then we're going to move to a vote.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. I will just close with that. I think that it is important that our systems live up to the promise that we hear all the time around equality. And equality means that when people who look like myself or who look like Ms. Lee and Ms. Clarity are calling out for help, that they get an equal response. That's simply what we're looking for. And I do want to say thank you to Ms. Lee and Ms. Clarity for being willing to share your stories, and Ms. Roller and Ms. Perez as well. I think Ms. Kirkland had to leave the call. And I also just want to thank MDH and DPS for all of the work that they have done to try to pull together some information, knowing that there still is a lot of work to do. And I just ask for support. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Thank you for bringing us this bill. The Chair renews his motion then that House File 952, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier? Aye. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson? Aye. Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Edelson? Aye. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Feist? Aye. Representative Grossel? Excused. Representative Hollins?
Absolutely, aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny votes aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill votes aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang?
Yes.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang?
Aye.
Representative Zhang, aye. That is 18 ayes, zero nays.
Very well. Members, on a vote of 18 ayes, zero nays, House File 952, as amended, is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you again, Chair Richardson, and to all the testifiers, and especially to the family of Ms. Clarity and Ms. Lee. Members, we're going to move to House File 613, Representative Pinto. And Representative Pinto, that was such a powerful and emotional moment for us that we did slow time down. But we're going to have to speed up time, perhaps unfortunately, but I think we can get in some good quality testimony on this bill and the next couple of bills as well. Representative Pinto moves to refer House File 613 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Pinto, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't think I'm known for long bill presentations or speeches, and so I'll try to make sure to keep that up for these next two bills. Members, House File 613 is a proposal that actually was heard by this committee, I think it was a year ago, shortly before the pandemic kind of upended things. It's a collection of proposals, and I think what I'd like to do, there's a couple of handouts that I'd like to direct the committee's attention to, but then really just turn to our testifiers to describe the need for the bill and some of the details, and then we can go to questions. With your permission, Mr. Chair.
Very well. I'm sorry. Are we hearing that?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I was following your directive to be so quick that I went off onto you. So, Mr. Chair, what I was saying is that I'm directing the committee's attention to a couple of handouts describing the bill, but really thought we could just move straight to testifiers to describe the need and the details.
Indeed. Thank you. The chair is the one who's slowing everything down here. Very well. We have Janelle Kendall from Stearns County. If you can come forward and give us your name for the record and provide us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Representative Pinto for bringing this bill forward and for your work as a pioneer in this field. Representative Pinto, in his day job as a prosecutor, actually tried some of the first cases, and we have modeled much of our work after what he has to say. I also have here today with me Chief Dave Ventrude of the Waite Park Police Department, who is actually the person who came forward with the local task force and put this together from the beginning. And I have Ole Tweeten, the chief of the criminal division in the Stearns County Attorney's Office, with me today. With the chair's assent, may we have Chief Ventrude actually start our presentation.
Very well. Welcome, Chief Ventrude, to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity. I will keep things as brief as I can. Dave Ventrude, I am police chief for the city of Waite Park. And my perspective on this is dealing with human trafficking, mostly sex trafficking, over the last 10 years. I would say the first 7 years was more mutual aid, multi-jurisdictional in nature, and doing it kind of part-time as cases developed. With support and funding from a state grant, we have been formally organized as a trafficking task force in central Minnesota. Our main contributors or participants is the Way Park Police Department, the St. Cloud Police Department, the Stearns County Sheriff's Office, Janelle Kendall's office, the Stearns County Attorney's Office, our local sexual assault center, as well as Terror with Refuge. And so we have a very strong collaboration here. My career between St. Cloud PD and now Way Park has been 30 years in central Minnesota. So I've seen this problem of human trafficking emerge kind of from the front row. And it's been a sad to see in many ways, but I am very gratified as to the collaborative nature of the work that we've been doing up in this area. The course of that work, we have seen, again, a lot of good things going on. And I guess I would suffice it to say, if I was to look at what we're proposing and what we're asking you to consider, if you look at this as kind of a crime triangle, what we're proposing is addressing some legislative changes. Given the history of our work, really over the last 10 years, you know, we've identified some things that we think will help in our fight against human trafficking. That the triangle being that we're looking at some sanctions and consequences that impact those who engage in trafficking. We also think we have some proposals that will impact the demand side of the human trafficking problem. And we also believe we are bringing forward some solid recommendations that will impact the victim side, both adult and adolescent victims of human trafficking. So with that context, I will turn it back to Janelle to talk more specifically about what we're proposing and why.
Thank you, Chief Benchard, and thank you so much for the work that you've committed your heart and soul and the resources of your police community there to vitally, vitally important. Thank you. Ms. Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Janelle Kendall, I'm the Stearns County Attorney. As Chief Benchard said, for the last 3 years, we have been part of the Central Minnesota Human Trafficking Task Force. During that time, we've received 333 tips through the first of this year. That involves investigations with thousands of pages of data. One of the primary ways that we prove up these cases of proving sex acts for money and for profit are through cell phone warrants, for example, massive data dumps, hotel receipts, surveillance. We cannot count on our victims to be carrying the weight of proof at trial. So, for example, we have had buyers testify at trial to corroborate our victims and prove that a sex act for money took place. These are long and complicated trials. These are, as persons have testified at this hearing today, this is extremely, extremely difficult for victims to be found, then to choose to talk to law enforcement, then to choose to testify. There's a lot of steps involved here. But in our 3 years of experience, there are things the legislature can definitely do to help with us. We've had 25 traffickers charged in that three-year period, 10 persons charged for soliciting children, and 80 buyers convicted just since the task force began. We did have numbers coming into that, and that was when we came to the legislature and asked for the intentional targeted approach that Chief Benchard talked about. We have a multidisciplinary team and approach to this. We have a data analyst to go through all those cell phone dumps, the Facebook pages, the instant messaging, a management level prosecutor, a case coordinator, and two full-time investigators. But it's not just about law enforcement and prosecution. We have legal aid lawyers at the table. We have Terrebinth Refuge, one of the few adult shelters in the state of Minnesota. We have our sexual assault center. We have our healthcare system, Center Care, along with our child advocacy center and an entire mental health team assigned specifically to work with these victims. When the COVID slowed down our buyer stings, we turned our attention to massage parlor ordinances. St. Cloud and Waite Park had 11 massage parlors show up in about a six-month period. And I tell you what, when you get the health inspectors on a team that knows what we know about trafficking and starts to pay attention to this from a civil regulatory, what's going on in that business? Those, I don't know if there's one of them left. Obviously, if the massage parlor is legitimate, awesome. But if it's a front for sex trafficking, we needed to know that, and we did find that to be true. So based on our experience, we have three areas of concern to submit to the legislature. Many of these trafficking laws were created 40 years ago, before everything was done by text and by email and instant messaging and Snapchat. So in the three areas, as Chief Venture notes, we have three different focuses. First, let's talk about the traffickers. We have a Minnesota law that defines certain offenses as violent crimes. There's literally a specific list from the legislature saying, if you do this specific crime, for example, robbery, high-level drug sales, repeated assaults, that has a specific designation that if you keep doing those violent crimes and keep getting convicted of those, we can actually ask for a higher sentence than the Minnesota sentencing guidelines would suggest for that offense. And we have found that over half of the traffickers that we're working on here have criminal histories as long as your arm and would qualify for that. And we literally can't get the sentences up to where they should be because sex trafficking isn't considered a violent crime. So very simple fix for the legislature to add sex trafficking offenses to the list that count as violent crimes for that sentencing enhancement. And again, over half the traffickers charged so far in Stearns County have criminal history scores of on average 6, but from 4 to 10. And that means they've been repeatedly charged, convicted, sentenced, space, do it again, space, 4 to 10 times on violent crime. So this is the type of offender that we are most likely seeing. So we ask that you add sex trafficking to the list of violent crimes. And at the same time, we've also found that we're getting statutory max sentences on these guys. We could actually get more if those people were considered violent criminals and if we can increase the statutory maximum. We have had a 25-year statutory maximum case. Representative Pinto has the dubious privilege of having seen people that were even worse than that. We need to move these statutory max sentences up because right now, if you get a guideline sentence, you may be able to get more than the 15 or 20 or 25 year max, but as soon as you hit the maximum sentence, you're done. So we ask the legislature to please increase the statutory maximum for the sex trafficking felonies so that when the Minnesota sentencing guidelines call for more, we can get more. The second prong is, as the chief said, is dealing with demand. As originally written, when we talked about sex buyers in Minnesota, and this is how the law stands today, that if the sex, the arrangement to buy sex is made in a public place versus a private place, in a public place, it's a gross misdemeanor, but in a private place, it's a misdemeanor. Basically looking at trying to take trafficking off the streets versus eliminate it from the globe. So what we are seeing right now is that the Minnesota Court of Appeals got a case out of Candiohi County where the deal to buy sex had been made through texting and through cell phones. And not surprisingly, the Minnesota Court of Appeals said, well, that's a private place, so that can only be a misdemeanor. Since this arrangement wasn't made in a public place, but in the private place of someone's cell phone, that's just a misdemeanor. Let's fix that, please. Sex buying should be gross misdemeanor across the board. It doesn't matter to the victim where it is that this arrangement was made. Now that we know what we know about sex trafficking and the prevalence of this activity, we respectfully request that the legislature make those gross misdemeanors across the board. And additionally, and this created a lot of discussion with this group last year, we've caught some people multiple times. Right now, those might be multiple misdemeanors, maybe multiple gross misdemeanors. We ask the legislature to create a sentencing provision whereby if a person is caught and convicted more than once in 10 years, that we can treat that person as a felon. And there's increased ability to monitor those people. There are just more things that we can do with a felony level sentence on repeat sex buyers. Along those same lines, solicitation of children, where we have gotten to solicitation, we can't prove that there was actual conduct and that there was an actual assault, but we know for a fact and can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that persons are soliciting children. And I remind this committee, as we got to talk to you about last year, the demand is 3 times higher if the ad is placed for a person who is 15 years old, of age or younger. So these are the really, really scary persons out there. Right now, that's only a 3-year felony. So if you don't have a significant criminal history, that's basically a little bit of jail time and 3 years of probation. And if you have a significant history, again, over half of the offenders we deal with, that's only 3 years in prison. We ask the legislature to please move that to 5 If a person does not have a history, we want to be able to monitor them for 5 years versus three. And if they do have a significant history, let us put those persons in prison for 60 months versus the 36 that is the maximum right now. And finally, because we do have Terrebinth Refuge, an adult shelter in our county, in fact, in Waite Park there with Chief Ventrude, we learned that trespassing at that facility is a misdemeanor, whereas trespassing at a domestic violence shelter is a gross misdemeanor. We came across that because we had it happen and realized that there's a specific designation for just those domestic violence shelters. We would ask that the legislature make that consistent and make it likewise a gross misdemeanor offense to harass or appear at or cause these kind of problems at trafficking victim shelters as well as DV shelters. We do have the support of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association on this bill. We have spent a lot of time with the Washington County Attorney's Office and the Ramsey County Attorney's Office sharing and gaining expertise together. We do have a strong statewide situation that I know another of Representative Pinto's bills is designed to address. Once you really start to dig in and see the reality of these cases on a daily basis, we come back to the legislature to ask your assistance in these specific areas, and I'm sure this won't be the last you'll hear of us, but this is what we have identified that we can specifically ask the legislature for at this time.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Kendall. A lot there, and a lot of learning that's happened as a result of the work that you're all doing collaboratively. Suggests offers to us a way for us to modernize our laws in order to meet the realities on the streets and close out those huge gaps that allow constant violators to violate. Representative, we do have two other testifiers. The clock is ticking. And so let me just ask if they're still testifying, if they can be as brief as possible. We have Oli Tevedden, I'm going to learn how to pronounce this name, and Carolyn Palmer. And so Mr. Tevedden from Stearns County Attorney's Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Oli Tweeden, the Chief of the Criminal Division. We're happy to answer any questions. I see representatives with their hands raised, so I'd like to just cede my time now and be back if you have any questions.
Very well. Thank you so much. And it's Tevedden?
Correct. Thank you.
All right. Very well. Thank you, sir. And then Carolyn Palmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carolyn Palmer, and I am the Safe Harbor Director at the Minnesota Department of Health in the Injury and Violence Prevention section. Thank you so much, Representative Pinto, for introducing this bill and for your longstanding leadership in the response to human trafficking in our state. I'm here to inform the committee briefly about Safe Harbor's work. Over the past decade, and thanks to substantial investment and interest from the legislature, the Minnesota Safe Harbor program has expanded significantly in its reach to meet the needs of youth through age 24 who are survivors of human trafficking, and particularly sexual exploitation. We use grants, protocol development, training, and evaluation to achieve this goal. Over 700 youth have been served over the past 2 years, a number we expect to rise as our grantees complete their data inputs for this time period. According to research by the University of Minnesota School of Nursing, where they are analyzing Minnesota student survey data, at least 5,000 youth in the state from all regions have experienced some form of sexual exploitation. So the work of Safe Harbor's grantees in partnership with the criminal justice and child welfare systems is critical to meeting the health and safety needs of young people. I will be adding information to some of the other bills on the agenda today as well. For the present bill, I would just like to address in particular the section about trespassing on shelter property where trafficking victims are housed. Last summer, a Safe Harbor shelter program had an individual who, over the course of 3 days, checked the building doors to attempt to gain access to a victim resident who he had exploited. The police were asked to sit in the parking lot when possible, and the program director also sat in the parking lot during shift changes at night to ensure staff could access their cars safely. Thankfully, staff and residents remained safe. but this is unfortunately an infrequent but serious issue for the youth striving to break free from exploitation and for the grantee programs providing services. Thank you, and I am very happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Thank you so much, Ms. Palmer. There are three questions. We'll do those three, and then we'll move on from there. Representative O'Neill, Representative Raleigh, and Representative Johnson. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a quick question for Representative Pinto. Just because we heard Representative Mueller's bill yesterday that would change, especially the ages on the crim sex statutes, and I'm just wondering, have you looked at what you're changing and what Representative Mueller is proposing to change and how the two play together, and then also how this works with current federal law? I'm just trying to piece everything together, Representative Pinto, if you could help us with that.
Good question, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Neill. Great questions. I might actually, I'll note that the County Attorney's Association has endorsed both the proposals we heard yesterday and then this proposal today, and so it should be that they work together well, but I might actually just see if one of our, although I am a prosecutor, as you know, I'm part-time these days because I'm working with you and everybody else, so I might actually turn to the full-time experts to see if they could weigh in on your questions.
Everybody. Ms. Kendall, perhaps?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Ole Tweeden again. Representative O'Neill, I'll try and answer the question as best I can in terms of the federal law component. It would not change the ability or capacity for us to prosecute cases federally. There are certain parameters in the federal law that you have to meet to prove up a sex trafficking case that are not required in Minnesota. This wouldn't necessarily change the amount of federal or state cases you have. They do work hand in hand, and with task forces around the state, we are in constant communication on cases that may have some federal legs to them. As to if the question is related to the other components of the federal law, the state law, including demand, we don't see many federal prosecutions on the demand side, and I don't know that there are any. This just ties together that what we're seeing in phones, in communications, in meeting with Johns, that if you've done this once, you should have known it was wrong at first, but if you do it again, you need a stiffer consequence. And so that would be probably the maximum sentence you could find would be those felonies for the Johns if they repeat it twice in 10 years. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Mr. Tweeden. Representative O'Neill?
Yes, I was just wondering if Representative Pinto sees any, I mean, obviously, there's correlation between Representative Mueller's bill yesterday and his bill today, and maybe they work really well together. I'm wondering if he has any thoughts about that, and then I'm done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. I needed sort of a minute to have my brain catch up here, and I think it finally has. So I believe that the answer is that the bill yesterday really focused. It's interesting. Sexual exploitation, sex trafficking have the word sex, and there's crime in it, of course. It is a crime. But in a way, the statutes are somewhat separate from one another. And I believe that the bill we heard yesterday really focuses on the CSC or criminal sexual conduct statutes. And this is really focusing on the prostitution and sex trafficking statutes. And they are next to one another. There's a connection. I will point out as a prosecutor that I actually think of sex trafficking exploitation as sometimes looking a lot more like domestic violence and sexual violence if you had to choose. There's a lot to unpack on that. We can get into it. But in any case, so I don't see that there's a conflict. The main thing is that there was a revamp of the CSC statutes that we heard yesterday, and that's terrific. At some point, we will need probably a revamping of the prostitution and sex trafficking statutes. There's a lot to discuss about that. You and I have talked, I think, offline, Representative O'Neill, about some people desiring to make some really substantial changes there. So at some point, we'll have to do that. But this is really making changes to those statutes, and I don't see a conflict between the two at all.
Great, great questions. So much, much work for us to do. Representative Raleigh.
Chair, line 1.14 of this bill says in the conviction side that a conviction by any court in Minnesota or another jurisdiction, and then later on 3.27, it says that there is a, this is new language inserted, whoever violates provisions, and it goes forward and says within 10 years is guilty of a felony. And I would like to ask the author, how does that vehicle work to bring in other jurisdictions? I mean, does this make it, can we bring in federal cases like somebody was convicted in Iowa and then it brings it into Minnesota? Will that help us to give a stiffer penalty by going to a felony? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bindle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Raleigh. So, right, so if you look at line 3.28, as you pointed out, the reference is to the term conviction, so within 10 years of a previous conviction. And that applies in Minnesota law, but that word conviction has this special meaning that, as you pointed out, it's actually a meaning that isn't changed under this bill. And under current law, the term conviction means a conviction in Minnesota or any other jurisdiction. So if it's in Iowa, if it's in federal court in Iowa, which is actually even a different jurisdiction than state court in Iowa. So, because of that word conviction that is already defined under Minnesota law, doesn't matter where it is, the same change applies.
Oh, very, very good to highlight that for the public here, Representative Raleigh. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Pinto, and thank you for this bill. It is something I really agree with. We need to put a stop to this. It's devastating to women and those involved, especially the women. And unfortunately, a lot of times it's teenagers. We need to do everything we can to stop this. The question I have is, if I don't know if you recall or not, last biennium, Representative Runbeck had a bill, and it was brought up by the one of the testifiers today that we have they're moving into massage parlors. But Linda Runbeck had a bill to allow jurisdictions when people come in for licensing for their businesses and stuff to do a background check outside of Minnesota. Right now, they only can do it inside. And what we've learned is these groups are coming from out of state where they've been caught there setting up massage parlors and other businesses in the state of Minnesota to further their sex trafficking businesses here, because we cannot actually look in other jurisdictions outside the state to see if they've had these convictions or had issues with that. So I'm in the process of, I just got started to get that bill rejacketed for this year, but I'm wondering if you'd take a look at that and possibly add this to this so the local jurisdictions can actually see if somebody's setting up a business, whether it's a massage parlor or something else, has had sex trafficking issues in the past, so we can stop them from coming to our communities.
Representative Bindle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I'm very happy to talk with you about that. I should potentially include that. I will note that very often folks in the massage business may not have had that prior conviction. So we should certainly look at that. I guess I would urge you in turn to look at House File 1275. I would love to have you as a co-author, which would provide for licensing of individual massage therapists, individuals doing this. As I've been working for years with a number of task forces trying to figure out what to do about this, and it seems to be the best approach to address the issue of massage therapists. County Attorney Kendall made references that there's more that we can do under current law, but I really do think we need licensure. So I'd urge you in turn to take a look at House File 1235, but very happy to talk with you about the Runbeck proposal and see what we can do.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Pinto. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Members, good, strong conversation. Representative Pinto, your motion will be to lay this over, so we'll consider it in our omnibus finance bill. I do want all who are tuning in and participating to know that that is not by any means the end of this bill. This conversation will certainly continue. I particularly want to thank the Trafficking Task Force in Central Minnesota. It's not the first time that we've heard from these good public servants. And the work that you're doing is just so incredibly valuable, for our state, not only in terms of your direct intervention, in the lives of people in your part of the state, but also in terms of how it informs us, for modifying, adjusting, modernizing our legal statutory approaches to ending this horrible crime. So thank you so much for all of you for being with us here today. Representative Pinto, the chair will lay over House File 613. And then Representative Pinto, you have the next bill, so don't go away. House File 946, Representative Pinto moves to refer House File 946 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Pinto, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I might direct your attention to a handout that was referenced by Ms. Palmer on the last bill. It's called Safe Harbor Handout for House File 946. And it kind of puts in one colorful piece of paper many of the efforts that our states have put together to address sexual exploitation and trafficking. As I think has come up previously, I've been really very deeply involved in that work for many years from a lot of different angles on this sheet and beyond. But if you think about it, what we have, this bill, House File 946, brings a couple pieces together. There are grants that we initiated in 2015 to support the investigation of sex trafficking. I believe, I'm almost certain that the Central Minnesota Human Trafficking Task Force is receiving one of those grants. I can see County Attorney Kendall nodding, but there are others as well. So, and I've referenced this in the past, there's about $1 million in grants going out around the state to investigate human trafficking. And then on the flip side, we have a really robust system of shelters and supports and a child protection response with a coordinator in the Department of Health in the form of Ms. Palmer, who you heard from before. And also there's a coordinator in the Department of Human Services to address the issue of child protection, child welfare. Members, House File 946 would create a similar coordinator in the Department of Public Safety in the Office of Justice Programs. There is such a similar person in that role to oversee our state's drug and gun investigation task forces. Remember, I mentioned previously, we've heard testimony that we spend four times as much, about $4 million per year on that. And so what House File 946, with an amendment that'll be coming, would do is to increase funding for those task forces, for the sex trafficking investigation task forces, but then have a coordinator to work with Ms. Palmer, with the coordinator of the Department of Human Services, to oversee the work, not the investigations, day-to-day investigations, but rather our state's response from a public safety and criminal justice perspective. And that's the purpose of House File 946. I believe that Ms. Palmer might be the testifier that I have. And Mr. Chair, I might suggest, if it's okay with you, that we hear from the testifier and maybe hold, there's an amendment and then a secondary amendment, and maybe helpful for members to sort of fully understand the bill before we get to those amendments.
I think it's wise advice, Representative Pinto. So why don't we hear from Ms. Palmer. Please come forward, state your name for the record again, and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Caroline Palmer, and I am the Safe Harbor Director at the Minnesota Department of Health in the Injury and Violence Prevention Section. Thank you again, Representative Pinto, for introducing this bill, and I just have a few brief comments to add. Safe Harbor is statutorily based at the Minnesota Department of Health and partners extensively with the Department of Human Services Office of Economic Opportunity, as well as the Child Welfare Divisions. We also partner quite a bit with the Human Trafficking Investigations Task Force at the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and the Office of Justice Programs in the Department of Public Safety. In addition, Safe Harbor provides support for the Tribes United Against Sex Trafficking, or TRUST, multi-jurisdictional task force. A statewide sex trafficking investigation coordinator would collaborate with our multi-agency team and provide assistance to the existing Human Trafficking Investigations Task Force. I anticipate that this position will enhance and increase efficiencies in the state's current support system by coordinating training, technical assistance, and protocol development. We would work together in the same manner that we currently work with the BCA and DHS to further expand the multidisciplinary and multi-jurisdictional response of the state. The response to human trafficking in our state is broad and varied, and we are fortunate that the legislature has been so supportive in terms of building a robust response, including building the capacity of law enforcement to handle these very complex cases in partnership with prosecution, child welfare, and victim advocacy. Thank you, and I am very happy to answer any questions for the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. Thank you for your work with Representative Pinto and also with the Department of Health in this area of safe harbor work. With that, members, we do have a couple of amendments. And so Representative Pinto, let me just stop really quickly to see before we get into the amendments if there's any quick questions or observations from committee members, particularly with Ms. Palmer. And I trust you'll be here. So if you need time to think about those, I'll give the members time to do that as well. All right, with that, Representative Pinto, you have a A2 amendment, is that correct?
I do, Mr. Chair, and I would, with your permission, I would move that amendment and then just provide a bit of explanation.
Very well. Representative Pinto moves the A2 amendment. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know often with an author's amendment, we don't talk about it too much, but I think it'd be useful just for folks to be really clear that the purpose of House File 946 in the first place was to have this new coordinator position take on a number of responsibilities, as you'll see in the bill. One of those responsibilities is to be in charge of training relating to human trafficking and community awareness as well. This is a piece that when we created the grants in 2015, it was just mentioned as being something the grants would go for investigation, and we did toss in the word providing training as well. But under the bill, the idea would be to have the coordinator do this, and that way the folks that were giving grants out to do investigations could focus on actually doing the investigations. To be clear, this is about the delivery of training to other agencies and not regarding the training for those grant recipients. In any case, what the A2 amendment does is that it makes clear then that the grants being received by the task forces would be focused on investigation rather than delivering training, because that's now the coordinator's job. And it also would add a blank appropriation to the investigation grants. We want to boost that as much as we can, whatever, of course, the committee's target and the committee's decision allows. So that is the purpose of the A2 amendment.
Okay, very well. And then Representative Pinto, there is an amendment to the author's amendment. I have it coded as the A3 amendment. And so I'll pause to see if anyone is going to offer the A3 amendment.
Chair Mariani, that was my amendment.
Very well.
I did talk with Representative Pinto this morning about this. I wanted to do it last night, but by the time I got home from everything with session, it was almost 11 o'clock, so I didn't want to wake him up, and I know he's been busy.
You're a very kind colleague, Representative Johnson.
The amendment was that we were concerned because the training was removed from it. And in talking to him, he wants, instead of the investigators out training, he wishes to have the coordinator coordinate the training as well. Occasionally, I can see investigators will be there to help with the training, because I think it's important that those who are actually doing the work train people, but get them more investigating and less focused on the training and let the coordinator handle that, which I also think is a good thing. The one question I do have is because he's going back into 2016 language and repealing it. I'm just wondering, because it dealt with grant funds, I'm just wondering if all the grant money has been used up or not.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe in talking with Mr. Walls, our fiscal analyst, that it's, the short answer to Representative Johnson's question is that yes, the grant funding is used up each year. So the 2016 funding was used up, but this is session law from 2016, which I guess is still governing a portion of the grant funding. So it's sort of, it's $1 million total, but it's, Chair Cornish gave $250,000 back in 2015, and that $250,000 is still governed by the language from then, I guess, from 2016. And then the remainder is governed by the next session law. So it's not that that's when the money was appropriated. It's just that's when the language that applies to it passed.
Okay, I understand that. I just wanted to get that clarified. So I will not be offering the amendment.
Okay, very well. Thank you, Representative Johnson. With that, members, we have the author's amendment, the A2 amendment, before us. Any further discussion? All right. If not, then, Representative Johnson, I think we can do a voice vote on this. Is that okay with you?
That is fine with me.
Very well. All in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And House File 946 is adopted, or rather amended, with the A2 amendment. Members, discussion on the bill as amended? All right. Well, Representative Pinto, final words. We're going to be laying this over as well as we move forward with constructing our omnibus bill with hopefully with this vitally important provision in it. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just note, members, that if we can take this step, I think it'll be a real positive one to continue to knit together our state's response to this issue. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Representative Pinto. Thank you for your work on this. And thank you, Ms. Palmer, for being with us today on this and other issues. With that, the chair then lays over House File 946. All right. And then our final bill, members, is from Representative Mueller, House File 698. Representative Mueller moves to refer House File 698 to the Committee on Ways and Means. I'm really excited to have you presenting your first bill in our committee, Representative Mueller. Your bill is before us.
Actually, Mr. Chair, thank you and members. This is my first bill ever to present in committee. So thank you for being here with that. According to the Safe Harbor Protocol Handbook, sex trafficking is a form of sexual exploitation in which a third party is involved in exploitation, whether by profiting from or by example recruiting, transporting, or advertising the person exploited. Victims of trafficking often have difficulty leaving their situation because those who are exploited often they exploit the victims through methods of control. And while it is comfortable to think that this is a problem in another place or another time or another country, the truth is that no place is left untouched by these horrific crimes. Matter of fact, a couple years ago in the town of Austin where I live, police rescued some sex trafficking victims from a massage parlor that was right on Main Street in my town of Austin. In the 2019 Office of Justice Programs Human Trafficking Report, it included statistical data from the Minnesota Statistical Analysis Center. They surveyed 422 police departments and county sheriff offices. From the 349 agencies that responded, they learned that 77% are trained to identify and respond to human sex trafficking. However, in spite of training, only 60% reported an ability to confidently explain human sex trafficking issues. 48% said they could properly investigate human sex trafficking. 37% had confidence in identifying victims. 28% have had designated units or groups of officers for human sex trafficking, and only 17% of the respondents have formal human sex trafficking protocols and policies. This bill, House File 698, requires the POST Board to develop model policy on human sex trafficking investigations and requires every law enforcement agency in the state to adopt the same or substantially similar policy. The bill provides flexibility for local agencies to adopt the model policy to fit their local communities, but it also provides assistance to the local police agencies as they are creating and implementing the policy. The model policy is to be developed in consultation with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, Human Trafficking Investigation Force Task Force, representative of other sex trafficking task forces, prosecutors, and Minnesota victims advocacy groups. Representative O'Neill authored this bill last biennium and was heard in the Public Safety Committee and laid over for possible consideration in an omnibus bill. Then COVID-19 hit, and many good policies initiatives fell by the wayside, such as this one. This bill builds upon the work that Representative O'Neill and this committee did last biennium and helps assure that cases of sex trafficking are identified and investigated properly. The fiscal note came back on the bill, came back as zero. The POST Board said it could absorb any costs associated with developing a model policy on sex trafficking investigation. The Public Safety Committee has been hearing a number of bills related to sexual assaults and sex trafficking this week. House File 698 is another important bill to add for our consideration. I would like to turn it over, Mr. Chair, to my testifier, Caroline Palmer, who you've heard several times today, is the Safe Harbor Director with the Minnesota Department of Health Violence Prevention Program Unit.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Well done for first bill presentation. With that, Caroline Palmer, if you can come forward, state your name for the record again, and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Caroline Palmer, and I'm the Safe Harbor Director at the Minnesota Department of Health in the Injury and Violence Prevention Section. Thank you so much, Representative Mueller, for introducing this bill, and I'm honored to be the first testifier on one of your first bills. I also want to thank Representative O'Neill. I testified with her last year and appreciate all of her work on this issue. Human trafficking investigations are among the most challenging, as you've heard today, and require significant resources. It is important for law enforcement agencies to have policies in place to respond and that those policies are revisited and updated regularly. Through Safe Harbor, for example, we have funded 6 community-based protocol development teams, and the law enforcement response is not only integrated into the team's work, but also leads local agencies to develop policies to enhance their response and build collaboration in their communities. They use a victim-centered lens, which is echoed in this bill language, and utilize guidance from the Safe Harbor Protocol guidelines that were released in 2017 and recently updated in 2020. The bill effectively responds to the ongoing need for education in a highly complex area of law enforcement investigations. When Safe Harbor first started 6 years ago, the Ramsey County Attorney's Office led trainings for over 2,000 officers in the state, and the BCA now holds an annual conference. And while training is important and needs to continue, a comprehensive policy will also provide further guidance as well as some standardized responses. It will also help law enforcement agencies coordinate with one another. That is really the ultimate goal of Safe Harbor, that collaboration is encouraged within and across disciplines. The Safe Harbor program is happy to help in any way to support the development of policies for investigating cases using our current partnerships, as well as through our connections with survivors and survivor-serving agencies. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. Members, questions? Representative Bickel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a lengthy conversation with Representative Mueller about this the other day, and thank you for her interest in this. And she had talked about her own experiences in different places, both in our country and around the world. And so I really appreciate your interest in this. And I mentioned this to Representative Mueller, a couple of changes that I guess I would suggest you really be looking to do. And I should note that when Ms. Palmer, the last couple of things that she referenced, so those trainings she referenced through the Ramsey County Attorney's Office, I was actually the person who delivered those trainings, those thousands of officers. And in fact, those protocol guidelines she referenced, she and I were the author of those and editor of those with input, of course, from a couple hundred people. So I guess the main substantive concern that I would have, Representative Mueller, that I guess I'd want would be to make sure that, and as I mentioned to you earlier, to make sure that the model policy would be explicitly tied to those protocol guidelines that we put together. There can be a difference in philosophy in addressing these issues and have one that is, I'm trying to remember the full phrases that Ms. Palmer that we had, but victim-centered, trauma-informed, and there's two others that are slipping my mind right at the moment. But to make sure that the model policy is really driven by that, that's not always the stance that comes out with law enforcement policies. I want to make sure that'd be the case. I guess I had two other concerns. One is to incorporate labor trafficking and have that be part of this. And then connected to that, the third point, it's a small one, but I mentioned to you, is that the phrase human sex trafficking doesn't make a lot of sense because we probably wouldn't be interested in sex trafficking of non-humans or human in any case. But human trafficking does encompass both sex trafficking and labor trafficking. And so I guess those would be the three changes that I guess I would want to have, and certainly would love to get your reaction as the bill's author.
Representative Mueller.
Yeah, so I had, as Representative Pinto, thank you, Chair, I had a conversation with Representative Pinto, and it is definitely, as I went ahead and looked at some of the resources that he gave me, many of the words, the model policy that he was the safe harbor is sound. And so it is something obviously that I am willing to make sure that we're able to put some language in about that if we can, with some consultation with some of other people who I'm getting advice through as I'm writing the bill.
Representative Bithell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess what I'd say is Representative Mueller, I'll put myself out there as a resource to you. If you're interested in moving the bill forward, I'd be really happy to be available to you as somebody. It may make sense for us to consult with one another in terms of you moving the bill forward. So I'd be really and be clear, I'd be happy to do that at any time. So I stand ready to assist. Thanks so much.
Super. Thank you, Representative Volmeo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to acknowledge that because of COVID, Representative Pinto and I, we had to shift our focus to other things. But had we still been working on this, this was the direction we were going to take. And so I would just encourage Representative Mueller to go ahead and embrace that. We are absolutely honored and blessed, I think, to have Representative Pinto as a part of our committee because he comes with a wealth of knowledge, and this is probably the deepest wealth of knowledge that he offers. And so I think we'd be remiss if we didn't include this incredible work that he has done and Caroline Palmer has done with Safe Harbor. So I wanted to get that on the public record that had I continued with this bill, that was the next step we were going to be taking. And anytime you're victim-centered and trauma-informed, those are really important factors when you're trying to do a model policy. So thank you for the work, and I look forward to hearing the end product. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. We are blessed in this committee to have a number of colleagues, frankly, on both sides of the aisle that are both super well prepared for this work in terms of experience on the ground. And also in terms of many years of doing some really good legislating. Representative Mueller, the chair is going to be moving to lay this over. It's a good bill, what I'm hearing. I'm not hearing anyone saying it's a bad bill, but it's one that can certainly use some ongoing work with it. And so I certainly would look forward to that unfolding. But before I do that, I want to offer you any last words or comments or encouragement here today.
Thank you, Chair and members, for listening to this. And a special thank you to Representative O'Neill and Representative Pinto, who have definitely encouraged me as I've been going through this process for the first time. And thank you to my testifier, Ms. Palmer, who has come to give her expertise as well. So members and chair, I thank you for listening to this bill, and I look forward to seeing how we can use this to make sure that we eradicate sex trafficking as much as possible.
Indeed, Representative Mueller. And by the way, I do like us constantly thinking about our executive branch boards and agencies as ways to heighten and complement the work that we're doing here and pushing out statutory law. It seems to me this is a really good, strong, as it was last year, expectation of our Pulse board, in keeping with our expectations of it to drive good, strong standards across our state that enhances public safety. So thank you for carrying this bill. Members, with that, the chair, I see Representative Johnson's hand is up. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, I just wanted to thank you and the whole committee for this committee today. We need to do everything we can to end sex trafficking. We've got to protect the victims as much as possible and get the perpetrators and the patrons in jail where they belong. Because not only it's a bad reflection on our society, it's very harmful as well. And so we do everything we can to protect the law-abiding citizens as well.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I concur. Members, with that, the chair will lay over House File 698 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you again, Representative Mueller and Ms. Palmer. Members, that concludes our business for today. We will, of course, meet at our regular scheduled time next Tuesday. And so until then please have a safe and hopefully warmer weekend. But with that, this committee stands adjourned.